Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On Air with Russell of Hotels, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Air with Russell of Hotels, where we talk about everything hospitality, from hotels to influencers and everything in between. We will feature guest interviews with hospitality professionals who will share their experiences. Your host, Russell Edmond, has spent over 25 years in the hospitality industry, beginning his moving into the sales arena and becoming a relationship building director of sales and marketing. Russell then went to the other side as a hospitality entrepreneur. He now consults in the hotel and meeting space, which includes being the CEO of Russell of Hotels Group. Did I mention he was a veggie foodie? Yes, Russell is always looking for good non-meat eats. Please welcome your host, Russell Edmond.
Hello, and thank you for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels live radio show. I'm just hearing some background noise. I'm not sure if you guys hear it, but there's some construction going on next door to my house, and it just started. So hopefully it doesn't affect the show. But as they say, this is Hollywood. The show must go on, so we're not even going to worry about that. But I had to mention it anyway, right? So thank you so much for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. We're all about connecting people and collaboration. Today is no exception because we have a guest here as well. As you can see, we have Dr. Ryan Giffen, professor extraordinaire from Long Beach State University Hospitality Management Program. So we're going to get to him in a little while, but just let him say hello. I mean, that wouldn't even be right for him not to say hello. Hello, Dr. Ryan, and thank you for joining me on the show.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be here today and to talk with you, Russell. Truly a pleasure.
All right, thank you so much. And it's funny, and I'll get to this, not funny, but I always talk about, you know, meeting people via LinkedIn and things like that. And that's exactly how I met this gentleman. So he actually does his own radio show as well as podcast. So I mean, it was just fitting that, you know, I said, hey, I just reached out to him and here we go. So but anyway, this is show number 78. Who would have thought, you know, a year and a half into this thing, I would even get to show number one. But and like I always say, the average podcast goes like six shows and that's it. We're at 78. So, I mean, I'm just blessed to be able to continue to do it. And we have, you know, guests on and talk about what's going on in the industry. So we do appreciate. I don't take this lightly that I'm able to do this show because it comes because of the support of people and some of the guests that we have on the show. So I do appreciate it. Industry news. Let's get into it because we got to get to Dr. Ryan. OK, so I can call you Dr. Ryan, right? Is that OK?
Of course.
Dr. Giffen, I'm sorry.
Either Ryan, you can call me Mr. Ryan. As long as it's respectful, that's what I tell my students.
Okay, sounds good. I appreciate that. So industry news. This is just personal industry news right here, this first thing. Just received a request from a client to source out a resort in Maui for a golf retreat for March of 2021. So why is that significant? Because now all of a sudden, you know, I'm starting to get, you know, RFPs or requests for RFPs or things like that. When, you know, a couple of months ago, we didn't know when the heck we're going to get some of the stuff. I'm sure other people are doing this as well or starting to feel this, but, you know, this is my first one in since March. So there you go. So, I mean, so things are kind of maybe loosening up a little bit and people want to travel more. And this is a leisure group. It's not a corporate group. So, and I always said that the groups that will bounce back first will be the leisure groups and things like that. So, I mean, this is it. So it's a small golf retreat that a client of mine, client/friend wants to do. So I'm going to source out some golf resorts in Maui. I mean, hey, sucks to be me right now. Maybe I get to do a, maybe I get to go and do a fam trip too. What the heck, right? So we'll see. I'll keep you posted on that. Smart meetings, back to having meetings. So way to go, Ms. Marin Bright, who's the CEO and president of Smart Meetings. So that meeting is actually going on at the Broadmoor Resort in Colorado. Actually started on Sunday, and I believe it goes through tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. A little less than 200 people in attendance, but you know, you got to get your feet wet, or you know, dip a toe in and see how, you know, see how the water is, and make sure we're keeping people safe. And I think Ms. Marin is making sure people are keeping safe. You have something to add there, Dr. Ryan?
I don't. You're nailing it. Safety's number one.
There you go. Okay, I saw you adjusting your mic like you were ready to say something. So I that's why.
No, I'm just getting ready for our interview.
Very good. And that meeting is, I want to say it's half hybrid and half in person, half in person, half virtual. Because I know a couple of people that were not able to make it, but they were still able to do their one-on-one appointments via Zoom or whatever platforms they're using. Last week, I attended a webinar, HSMAI, Hotel Sales Marketing Association International. I believe that's what it stands for. I always get my acronyms mixed up. But it was an interesting topic. How to become an influencer sales rock star. Okay. And you guys know how big I am with social media, right? So I'm trying to be that rock star, right? If I'm not already, right? But that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I try to aspire to be, influencer via social media, you know, that go-to person, if you will, if you need anything hospitality, anything hotel. It was, the presentation was by Holly Zoba, who is founder and president of Influencer Sales. That's the name of her company. And this was via LinkedIn. So meaning, are you guys familiar with, and I wasn't familiar, and shame on me for not even knowing this, but your SSI score, are you familiar with an SSI score via LinkedIn? Are you familiar with that, Dr. Giffen? SSI?
I'm not. I could assume what it is. It probably has something to do with rankings, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So social selling index.
Yep.
Okay. So basically you're able to measure the impact of your social selling efforts with LinkedIn and how effective you are at establishing your professional brand. Yep. And they give you a score. So you get a dashboard. You can actually go Google it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't you need your own? Like, don't you need to like subscribe to their business platform or something for that? Or
no, because not. Yeah, anyone that has a profile on LinkedIn can do it. So I just Googled it because when I heard about it, when Holly mentioned it on the presentation, I just Googled it and see if I can get a score. And you can get it for free. It is a monthly dues if you want to, you know, maybe work on your score or get more information as you're moving forward. So it's kind of like your report card. If you're familiar with the Hotel Star Report rankings, mm-hmm. It's kind of like that for an individual business. You know what I mean? A small business or something like that. It basically lets you know how you rank in your industry, in the people that that follow you, maybe the people within your network. You know, so I happened to look at it. It was free. I did. Okay, I have to share the numbers with you, right? So, and I'm not going to go a lot into this because I think next week I can go into this a little more, but I just wanted to touch this because it was very interesting because I didn't know about it. So anything new, of course, I'm going to be all over it. But my score on the socials selling index was 70 out of 100. Okay, so that's pretty good. That's a C, right?
That's good, that's a C. Yeah. you want to know what mine is? I got a D plus, and I'm 6. I got a 66.
Wow, okay. Now, do you see the number? It says top 1% of the industry SSI rank.
Uh-huh.
Mine, uh-huh. I'm in the top 1%.
Oh, man, I'm top 9%. Man, I got some work to do today.
I'm in the top 1% SSI rank, and then the top 4% network social selling index rank. So
that's
top
amazing.
1%, top 4%. So, and I just did this for the first time just the other day. So
that's amazing. That's cool. Amazing.
And it's based on four different categories: establishing your professional brand, and it is ranked up to 21, right? So establishing your professional brand, finding the right people, engage with insights, and build relationships. And out of build relationships, I'm 25 out of 25. Boom, drop the mic. I'm done. So go through that. Like I said, we can talk about this another time, but I just wanted to touch on that because I'm still on kind of a high. So it gives you metrics on how you can improve too. So I have these numbers and it tells me how I can improve these rankings as well. Because Holly Zoba, she has 80 out of 70. So my goal is to beat her. Okay, so she doesn't even know anything about this. I don't even know her. But bottom line, Holly, the gauntlet
is coming after you, Holly.
I'm coming after you. So there you go. But hey, is your hotel open? Did you go back to work? Are we creating some FOMO, hashtag FOMO, fear of missing out? So we want to make sure that if you're open, you're doing things via social media. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about social media and the importance and the power of social media. So we want to make sure if you're open, you're back to work, you know, we need to put some stuff out there. So make sure people know. Social media usage is up nearly 7 minutes over 2019. So meaning more people are spending time on social media. So, you know, what's your strategy for that moving forward? I mean, those are things we need to think about. I'm not going to talk about the food today because, like I said, I'm trying to get into. We all know that I'm non-meat eats, though, right? And but I'll talk about food at another time. Are you reinventing yourself? Are you swerving? That's what I use. Instead of using the P word, what everyone else uses, I use the word swerving. Are you getting around? Are you
making wait? What's the P word? I'm assuming it's pivot.
Exactly. Oh, okay. You know, everybody's using pivot. Oh, you got to pivot. Yeah. You have to do this. No, I came up with 8 words that you can use other than pivoting. And I started to use swerve. So you can rotate, you can turn, you can revolve, you can spin, you can swivel, you can twirl, you can oscillate.
Ooh, that's what twirl. You want to do. I like twirl.
No, okay, there you go. So I came up with swerving. It's funny. My mom is swerving. So my mom is 79 years old, something like that, right? So the other day she asked me, via text. Okay. She says, do you Zoom? I'm like, yeah, I do. That's how I do my show. And she goes, how's it done? These are 3 questions. How's it done? And then I need to learn. So she's trying to pivot or swerve as well. I mean, she's retired, of course, but she wants to learn how to do Zoom. So I'm like, okay. So I'm trying to teach her. I mean, it was a short session yesterday. She said, let's resume on Wednesday. Cause she was like, flustered with it. But anyway, and she's in Blythe and I'm here. So I'm trying to do this over the phone and all that stuff, but we'll get it. So hang with it, Mom. We'll get it together. Okay. The best way to predict the future is to invent it. So always remember that. Sometimes we have to do our own thing. I'll just real quick give you contact information, how to get a hold of me, russell@russellofhotels.com. And that's the same on all my social media platforms, Twitter, Russell of Hotels, IG, Russell of Hotels, LinkedIn, Russell L. Edman. Facebook, I have 2 pages, Russell L. Edman and Russell of Hotels. And of course, I have a website, which is russellofhotels.com. And I'm going to quickly go through this stuff, meaning I'm bypassing some things. A quick shout out. Somebody just gave me this information a little while ago. 4 Friends Inn. This is a hotel. This is a small boutique hotel in Santa Ynez, which is right outside of Solvang, which you guys know is one of my favorite little destinations to go and do wine tasting and hang out or whatever. And it's an option to Santa Barbara. I mean, everybody wants to go to Santa Barbara, but everybody always complains about how much they have to spend when you go to Santa Barbara. Okay, well, go to a couple miles or 30 minutes north of Santa Barbara. Go to Solvang. Go to Santa Ynez. Okay. Check out this For Friends Inn. FORFRINNDSINN.com. ForFriends.com. 8-room boutique property, on-site breakfast, happy hour, app served daily, outdoor garden for 25 people for a small corporate gathering or for weddings or whatever. I got this from my girl, Michelle Carlin, who will be a guest on my show next week. But she mentioned it today. We were having an email going back and forth. So I said, you know what? I'll give them a quick shout out. So if you're interested, Santa Ynez, forfriendsin.com. Check it out. And Michelle will be, I was going to say, who's on blast for next week? That's Michelle Carlin, Alignment Advising. So she'll be on blast or on the show next week. Introduction of today's guest and topic. Okay, we're getting to the drum roll now. With over 20 years of experience in human resources, hospitality, and academic roles, Dr. Ryan Giffen is an expert in human relations and business culture, providing advanced leadership, employee engagement, and human resource consulting. Dr. Giffen understands the complexities of the dynamic workforce of today. Dr. Giffen's career began in hospitality, leading operations and human resource departments for Fortune 500 companies, including Kimpton Hotels and Resorts, Marriott Worldwide, as well as serving as the head of human resources for over 700 employees at Market Broiler restaurants. Dr. Giffen then found his passion for teaching and consulting, which led him to achieve a PhD from Iowa State University, Go Cyclones, in hospitality management with a research emphasis on human resources. This pursuit led him to the role of culture and human resource speaker, where he was asked to speak at organizations, including the Orange County Hotel and Lodging Association, Collins College of Hospitality Management, which is at Cal Poly Pomona. I know that because I went there. The International Education Corporation, Hilton Hotels and Resorts, and several others. Currently, Dr. Giffen supports hospitality organizations in both culture and human resource strategy, is the host of the MOD Report podcast. I had to ask about that because I know what MOD stands for, okay? I used to be the resident MOD report podcast and is an assistant professor of hospitality management at California State University, Long Beach. Without further ado, let's welcome to the microphone, Dr. Ryan Giffen. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, take a swig of water there. You've been.
Yeah. So
I get the feeling.
Yes, I'm a little parched, but I'm glad that. See, now Dr. Ryan has his own show and you can see that he's a professional because look at his setup here. Okay. You see my setup, you see his setup. Okay. So he's all about business, right? So there you go. So let's get into it. I'm gonna jump into this. But first of all, let me just give me, how'd you start with this whole thing? How'd you get in here?
Yeah, into the industry.
Yes, into the industry, into the fire.
Yeah. You know, it's I feel like every time anyone answers this question from the industry, it's always a funny story. So I've never had an intention to actually go work at a hotel. In fact, I went to college to study social science with a political history emphasis, or poli sci with history emphasis, and basically go and teach it at a high school. That was my goal. I wanted to teach civics and economics, and found myself interning for a congressman during my latter years of college and running for student government and participating in all of that. And, you know, I had to make some money because I needed a car to get to work. And so, so I thought, so I ended up talking with one of my friends on our way home from San Diego. And she's like, you should go work at the hotel with me. I work at the Courtyard Marriott in Buena Park. Shout out.
I know that property well.
Right across from Medieval Times there. And and sure enough, I was like, I don't have hotel experience. I've worked in retail. I've worked at like Marshall's. I've worked in my high school cafeteria. I've worked at a summer camp working in the kitchen. So I have like more of a food kitchen background, but not working a front desk of a hotel. And so I said, you know what the heck, I'll just go in, I'll interview, I'll see what happens. And I go in, I interview with the front desk manager, Michelle at the time, and had a great conversation. And kind of just fast forward from there on out, I was a junior in college, and I worked there for 2 years before I graduated. And just before graduation, I did not have a full-time job lined up. And so my general manager at the time, Mitch Healy.
Mitch Healy?
Mitch, do you know Mitchell Healy?
I know Mitch Healy. Mitch Healy was a GM then, and he was a trainer. And he trained me on a couple things. I know Mitch. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so he was my first general manager. So he was the GM of the courtyard.
Too.
It was good times, though. He was...
He was tough.
I learned a great deal. You know, he really invested in me and sending me to, I forget what they call it. I call it Courtyard University, but went up to Seattle for 2 weeks and learned the ropes as an operator. And, you know, let me back up a little bit, but that's when I was getting ready to graduate, I didn't have a job lined up. And so I was offered an opportunity to interview for a sales manager position. And I was like, sales? Like, I'm not a salesperson. What do you want me to do in sales? And they're like, no, Ryan, you don't get it. Like, you understand the guest that's checking in. You know what the Boeing customer wants because you've talked with them, or, you know, the Yamaha guest that's checking into the hotel, and you've gotten to know those accounts that, you know, you'd be great for it. So I said, all right, well, let's see what happens. Interviewed, got the job, and there you have it. And from there, I just kind of spent a couple years in sales. Mind you, this was shortly after September 11th. So being a sales manager at the time at a select service property wasn't exactly easy, but we held our own pretty well. And I went on and worked in the restaurant, worked in housekeeping, worked as a guest care manager, which at the time was at the Fountain Valley Courtyard right off the 405 freeway there. sits on a dual property with the Residence Inn.
Yes, Residence Inn right across from it, yes.
Yeah, so that general manager, it was a dual property. And so we had one general manager for two hotels. And so that's really where I started to learn how to run a hotel, was at that property, because he empowered me to, you know, look at the P&Ls and write the period end critiques each month and work with him on those. And that's where I was able to do that. So honestly, to answer your question in a very short way, I fell into it by accident. That's kind of how I got into it. And I loved it so much that I went to go get a PhD in hospitality management at Iowa State. And here we are. But I will tell you this, Russell. I had a very short stint as a general manager with Broughton Hotels. There was a property down in Santa Monica called Hotel California, just like the song.
Welcome to the hotel.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. Little small property right next to the Lowe's hotel, right next door to it. And it was a very small property that also had full-time apartments that lived, that were housed there. And listen, I didn't last longer than 2 to 3 weeks at that property. And I had a heart-to-heart with Larry Broughton at the time. And I was like, look, I can do the general manager thing. I can do it. It's not exciting. I don't, for me personally, balancing guest needs with employee and being the middleman to the ownership group wasn't something that was for me. And that's kind of where I found my love into human resources management, training and development, employment law, which combines a little bit of that civics and government and U.S. history for that matter, that I really enjoy. And so it just kind of combined all those passions. And so as I finished my master's degree in organizational leadership, that's just kind of where it took me. It took me into the path of hotel human resources. And that's where I spent some time at Kimpton Hotels as an area manager of HR, and with Market Boiler Restaurants as their corporate head of HR, and just kind of bouncing around in that sense. And, you know, during all of this, by the way, during all this time, since I was at the Courtyard in Fountain Valley, I was teaching part-time hotel management at Cypress College, Orange Coast College, and just kind of did these part-time adjunct gigs at night, teaching those 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. classes after working. And before you know it, you know, like I said, I wanted to be a teacher. That's what I originally went to school for my secondary ed credential. And I found my way into higher education since 2007 and haven't left it since.
Wow. That's interesting. Because most people, when they get the bug, you know, 20 years later, they find themselves still there. they don't transition out. And they darn sure don't transition to be a professor or anything like that. So that's great. But two things that I want to say before we move on. I used to work for Broughton Hotels. I know Larry Broughton very well.
Okay, this is starting to creep me out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why haven't we made?
Are you sure our paths haven't crossed? I mean, as hospitality as big as it is, it's really small. So we've had to have seen each other.
Yes, and I know Mitch Healy. Like I said, he was. In fact, is he not a chef now? If I'm not mistaken.
Let me tell you this much. I mean, I've been to his house for Thanksgiving a few years ago, and a couple of times actually, and. Can that man cook? Holy cow.
Yes,
he needs
He
needs to own his own Michelin star rated restaurant. If he's listening, I'm gonna tell him that. But
he was one of the greatest people, great trainer. I mean, he was tough. I mean, but that's good. I mean, I did learn a lot from him as well. But who was your GM in Fountain Valley at the dual property?
Steve Van de Sieg.
Steve and Janice, I know them. Steve used to be the GM at LAX.
Yes,
Courtyard.
Yes.
See, I started my career with Courtyard back in probably a few years before you did. But the same people. I mean, I've known Steve. In fact, he probably started a little before I did. We kind of came through the same program. I don't know if you know Byron Bean. I don't know if you remember him.
I know the name. Smith, I know the name.
Lori Haid or Michelle Strike and you know this one whenever I come up with it.
Yeah.
Why can I think of her name? Bridget.
Hey.
Bridget. Yes.
I think
so she actually hired me.
Oh, I love Bridget. In fact, she was when I was struggling with sales, I remember after 9/11. I remember her giving me this idea of Ryan, you need to motivate the front desk staff. And create a war board, she called it. And I remember, and this is in Buena Park, I had my competitors, my comp set, in the back there for all the front desks to see. And what we were trying to do was capture that market share from other hotels to bring them over. So I remember stealing, and I say stealing as, well, you know, if you're a salesperson, you get it. But I remember capturing guests and bringing them from the embassy or at the time the Radisson at Knott's Berry Farm, bringing them over into our property. But Bridget Belinsky, she's officially retired as of a few months ago, actually.
Wow, very good. Well, congratulations to her. And she was great as well. She originally hired me, her and Sam Veneziano hired me at Cal Poly Pomona at a job fair. So it was great. And I had a job 6 months before I graduated. So I was on top of the world in those days.
You know, that's awesome to hear. It's very sad that I don't think that's going to happen this time around. You know, I have these kids, these college students that are even studying this stuff. And when it comes to job fairs and stuff, I don't think those offers are going to be on the table this year. That you and I had what I believe to be a great advantage to us, that we had these jobs lined up before we graduated. But nowadays is in terms of the industry, I don't know what that's going to look like unless this COVID thing gets put to bed here soon.
Yeah. You know, that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you. I mean, that's a perfect segue here. but one of the questions I was going to ask, what are we telling or what are you telling students now? What are they preparing for at this point? Or are they preparing at all? I mean, they're still in the major, so they have to, they're still graduating. I mean, what does it look like out there for them?
You know, at least with our program at Long Beach State and the hospitality management program, we were wondering if come fall, if we were going to see a decline in student enrollment. We actually saw the reverse, which most colleges and universities do see. They see an uptick in college enrollment when the economy is hurting. When unemployment goes up, generally, college student enrollment goes up. So that being said, you know, in the hospitality program, I have some theories as in terms of what's going to happen. And this is what I tell my students. And again, it's a theory, so I don't know if it's true or not. But just like the Spanish flu, granted, hotels weren't as large as they were back then, but there was still travel and tourism. People still were on the interstate, traveling horseback or whatever it is to go from point A to point B on these roadside motels. and there was still food and those things. Listen, at the end of the day, we all know, and I think everybody agrees, it's not going to be like this forever. And just like go to the gate to welcome our family without a boarding pass. I don't know if you remember those days.
Yes.
In the beginning, it was like, are you kidding me? This is crazy. Like, I don't understand this. This is going to be hard. And everybody was complaining about it. And look at it now. It's just like, it's normal. It's perfectly normal. Wearing masks, I'm finding nowadays, it's just normal. Like, I don't even recognize it on people anymore. It's like, you know, it's just the way we are. So that being said, I tell students, look at what I have seen is the older generation or the more seasoned hoteliers or restaurateurs in the industry that were either furloughed or laid off don't have the time or willingness to take a risk on their retirement accounts. And so what I'm finding is that there's a mass exodus of these well-seasoned professionals that are in their 50s, late 50s, early 60s that have no intention to going back into the hotel or restaurant and are seeking employment elsewhere and brushing up their skills more on technology and having more work at home opportunities and things. And so what this may create is a gap. And this gap was already present with the industry. We had more positions open in hotels, particularly in the United States. We had more positions available than we did qualified workers prior to COVID. And so to get those positions filled, and again, we can go on this topic, but to get those positions filled, we either need to, you know, allow some kind of workforce, whether that is having visas coming in and allowing that, or having some kind of legal right to work, path to citizenship program in place, not to get into politics, but something had to be done if we plan on continuing to manage our hotels at the level that we are expecting. And so if we have an older generation not coming back into the industry and you have a younger generation getting their hospitality degrees, their chances and their opportunity to promote more quickly into a management role and into an executive role, the trajectory of that is going to increase more than ever before because we're going to need those individuals. And so for now, I advise students who may be listening, get on LinkedIn, start networking, send an electronic Starbucks card to someone random that you believe is qualified that you have interest in. So if you want to be an event planner, find someone out there that is a professional in event planning, send them an electronic Starbucks gift card and set up a meeting to have coffee with one. Making those relationships now, today is going to be important. So hopefully that answers your question.
It's not
the end of the world. It's not doomsday. The industry knows it. And although we may see a collapse of some corporations going bankrupt and filing for bankruptcy and probably some airline mergers coming up in the future or cruise lines starting to partner or acquire one another, there's going to be some of those, sure. Mm-hmm. But it's not going away. We just need to remain vigilant, which I think hoteliers and restaurateurs and just the industry and entertainment, we've always been resilient and we've always bounced back in economic trials and tribulations and have always made sacrifices. And it's just, it's in your blood or it's not. And the ones that stick it out, I think, will be the ones that will be rewarded with those promotions. And
hit it on right on the head because, I know personally, I have conversations almost on a daily basis of people that came up with me that are leaving the industry. You know, they've already pivoted or reinvented themselves and they're not coming
back.
They're swerving. They're swerving. So I use the P word just so you know what it is again. But so that's what they're doing. So they're not coming back. A lot of them are not coming back. So what you said, was perfect, which creates this gap for, you know, a new blood. And you can tell even before this was happening, I travel a lot, or at least last year I traveled a lot, going to meetings, because I'm a hotel site selection person as well, meeting planner, whatever you want to call it. So I have that as a component is what I do as well. And just seeing the younger people that are coming up now, you know, so the older people are leaving and you pay for the most part. But now there's this new crop of younger people, hungry salespeople.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can just tell things are changing. They're changing anyway. Yeah. And now it's kind of fast forwarded.
Well, listen, and they have, when we talk about that younger generation, they have the opportunity to take those high risks, to take a risk, whether it's in their retirement accounts, if they even have one, but they have a better chance at rebounding economically by taking high risks now and reaping the rewards later. And so, you know, that's what I say. It's like, it's not that you should just stop studying hospitality management or don't even go work in the industry, because listen, honestly, I think from what I'm seeing and reading, and you look at the data and the Bureau of Labor Statistics and employment numbers throughout the state of California, every single no such thing as job security. And I have said that before COVID. If you think that your job is 100% secure, even if you are a tenured professor, you have another thing coming, because it doesn't nothing is guaranteed. Our life isn't guaranteed tomorrow. I think there's only one industry that, you know, we could argue that the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry is probably the most financially stable right now. But even they are having issues because of government regulation and all this other stuff. So listen, if you are saying that I shouldn't go into hotels or restaurants or sports management or meeting and events because it's too high risk, everything is high risk. Everything is high risk. I don't care what industry it is. Overnight, it can switch over.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much on that one. And this is good.
Holy
though.
Moly, you that asked, is flying
I just
by.
Throw one. I just throw one thing, and you just run with it. And that's listen, the perfect.
I'm a professor.
Interview.
I could talk all day long. So shut me up anytime.
No worries. This is all good. Okay. Due to COVID and social change is going on, what has or will it be different in the world of HR? What's going on in the world of HR that's different than pre-COVID or pre-social change? What do we need to, or what do HR professionals need to look for, or how are they changing what they do, or how they present things, or how they hire, or whatever?
Yeah, I This is LA Talk Radio. So, you know, here in California or even the Los Angeles County area, when we practice human resources in this area, if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere, especially in the state. Very, very difficult if you want to do it right. It's a very difficult profession to do successfully within the state of California and also in LA County. Me not getting into that whole thing is in terms of regulation. That's where it comes down to. It's the regulation, the regulatory statutes that are pressed upon us at the state level. Notice I didn't say federal, at the state level, at the county level, and then at the city level, you know, is astronomical. It's not that it can't be done, and it's not that it's a bad thing. In fact, it's very favorable to employees to protect those employees from a safety standpoint, from a non-discriminatory standpoint, et cetera. So to answer your question, Russell, I would say one of the big challenges that I think HR professionals are struggling with today and that they have to keep up with is the constant everyday change in regulation. Every single day, especially in March and April when COVID hit, it felt like every single day there was a new law. There was a new governor order. There was a new order out by the mayor of Los Angeles. There was, you know, Santa Monica mayor was saying something different than what the LA County supervisor was saying versus what Gavin Newsom was saying. And it was like, well, what the heck am I supposed to do with my employees? What do I tell the owner? What do I tell my boss? And that's where having a good foundational knowledge of employment law is important for a good HR practitioner, I think, to be successful in our state, without having to ring up that attorney bill for having to call them every 5 seconds. So I think that's going to be the big one. The regulation is going to get tighter and tighter. If you are a resident of California and you have not voted yet, get out and vote. But look at your ballot. Look how many propositions are on it that are impacting just the labor force itself. Okay, so it's those kind of things that we need to keep up with. And I think that's what HR folks are going to have to really take more seriously if they're not already about really understanding the laws that are impacting employment laws that are going to impact their workforce, particularly the ones related to safety, OSHA compliance, health and regulation, et cetera. Not just discrimination policies, building good and having good, strong, equitable policies in our handbook, and actually don't just write it, don't just throw it in your handbook. You actually have to do something with it. You actually have to provide the training, the diversity, inclusion, and equity training. You have to do those things. Don't just throw it in a handbook. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. But I think last but not least, that's number one. Number two, and my last thought is we need to be more flexible and understanding work from home and to embrace that. Hey, look, clearly our business was still successful when all of our employees were at home. Okay. So this notion that employees have to be in the office 50 hours a week between 9 to 6 p.m. is just not accurate. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have some kind of work-life balance in the sense that maybe we talk about when things start turning around that we have every other Friday as a work from home day, you know, or every Friday would be great. But, you know, I have some clients, as I'm sure you've come across, but I've had some clients and former bosses that are just so salted in their ways that they just never believed that employees can be productive at home. They think that they're watching TV all day and they're eating Dorito chips and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. When the reverse is true, and we all have seen the research that we are actually more productive at home. Yeah. It's we don't work the traditional 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. For me, I am most productive between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. That's when I get my best writing done. It's when I get most of all of my hard thinking done. And between 2 and 5, which is in about 15 minutes, that's my nap time. Hey, that's siesta time, man. That's when I can't read. I can't write. I am relaxing. But something happens at 5 o'clock. Mm. I can be on my computer writing a novel in the next 4 hours nonstop because I am that motivated to get it done or okay. that productive. So very good. Work from home balance.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I ask, you know, like I said, I have conversations with people and they're working more hours. They're being more productive and they're working more hours on top of that.
For less money.
For less money.
Their money has, their salaries have likely have been cut along with
exactly.
a furlough.
Exactly. 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 What, I bounce around in my questions. What area of concentrations are today's students leaning towards? Is that food and beverage? Is that sales, meeting planning? What are today's students looking forward to? Or what are they putting all their efforts into when they get into when they graduate?
Yeah, I'll be honest, Russ. That's a hard question for me to answer because I'm biased. Biased in that I'm at Long Beach State and each university. So let's take Cal Poly Pomona, where your alma mater, right? Mm-hmm. So Cal Poly Pomona and their hospitality management, their curriculum has a stronger emphasis in restaurant food management.
Yeah, I hated that. Yeah. For the record, I hated that. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But you see what I'm saying? Like there is more emphasis on restaurant management, whereas at Long Beach State and my program, we have a very similar curriculum, but we don't have a heavy emphasis where you have to spend a certain number of hours working in a restaurant or whatever it is. So, so I'm biased in the sense that I could only speak to Long and what I have seen and is in terms of gauging the interest, it's a pretty even split where there's hoteliers that want to work in hotel lodging. And then there's students who are event planning, which includes weddings. It's kind of tight in there. Wedding planning, large events, or even EDC, those concerts, why am I blanking on it right now?
Live Aid, things like that? Not Live Aid. What is it called?
Holy moly. There we go. Coachella and the EDC happens in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah, so those. So that kind of falls into that event management planning thing there as well. So and again, it's a bias thing. It's hard for me to gauge it because I teach those upper division courses and most students have to take my leadership and strategic management class, but there's a good mix of students in there. hotel lodging, event planners, restaurateurs, and even some folks who might even be interested in, which I love, get very excited about this, that want to study hospitality management but go get their law degree to practice employment law in hospitality.
Okay.
And that's kind of a misconception, is when people are like, oh, you're studying hospitality management. What do they do? Teach you to be nice? It's like, no, that's not what we do. Because you're either nice or you're not. I can't teach that. But there's so many transferable skills there that, listen, if you have a bachelor's in hospitality management, but you have this inner dying passion and artistic form of doing interior design, you would be a great asset to a large corporation like Marriott, who needs those interior hotel lobby designers to design those products, and to have that hospitality background and that knowledge, that foundational knowledge, is fantastic.
That's true.
So that's where, you know, we get attorneys that come out of the program. We get executives that go into real estate investment trust management companies, and just all over the place. So, the degree is, can take you anywhere.
That's true. That's true. And a lot of times people have a hard time, you know, the people that are trying to transition out, they're like, well, where are my transferable skills? I mean, they don't think about things like that. I mean, you just hit it on the, I mean, there's a lot of things we can do, right? You know, it's not just managing a hotel or managing a restaurant or whatever. I mean, if you have interest in HR, you can go into HR. If you have interest in law, go back to school and go and be a lawyer and then do employment law for hotels. So, I mean, there's a lot of, it comes with schooling. It comes with more time, comes with more money. But, I mean, those things that you can transition out and do. You mentioned a leadership class that you do.
Yeah.
Leadership program. Now, what is that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I teach, it's a hospitality strategic management and leadership course. Okay. So this is a high-level course that all students take as part of their core before they go into their internship. So it's essentially one of their last official classes. But in that course, I help guide students to be more strategic thinkers and being able to analyze, like right now, it's midterms right now. So one of their midterm for that class right now is to basically, they are given a 500 room hotel, luxury brand hotel, and they are the executives of that corporation, and they have to choose where to put the hotel, given based off of two locations, Rio de Janeiro in Brazil or in Abu Dhabi. They have to research both of those areas and decide, where should I put my hotel? What makes the most sense after I do a bunch of analysis? So there's like the pastel analysis. They have to look at the political climate. They have to look at all these different factors that influence where will I be most successful to put this hotel. And so they have to put in all these tools. There's the Boston Consulting matrix that they put, there's the SWOT analysis, there's the pastel analysis, there's all these different tools that they're using to make an argument in their midterm to convince their ownership group, which is me,
you,
where I should invest to put this hotel.
Okay.
So it's that kind of level. And then leadership. A big part of this course is talking about leadership. Sign the book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader by Mark Sanborn. A great little book, highly recommend it. You can get through it in less than a couple of hours. But we look at all of these ideas of what it means to be a leader and how we can take those skills into the workplace, into our homes, into our church, or wherever we encounter other people, and practice those leadership skills.
Okay. I like it. I love it. I'm so glad that I mean, I always turn back to my own experience when I was at Cal Poly. The HR class that we had were given by attorneys, okay, that had no hospitality, any hotel experience. So they were talking legal jargon, you know, which you didn't understand, and you couldn't apply it. Well, at least it was hard for me to apply that to the real world of hotel. And I didn't learn anything from it, because once you get into the real hotel, none of the stuff he talked about, it didn't translate. It didn't, didn't connect anything. So you're just kind of flying, building a plane as you're flying when it came to HR.
Yeah. Now, listen, if you ever have to be taught by an attorney or you have to call up an attorney, keep in mind, and I have a lot of attorney friends, so they get this and they would agree, attorneys are reactionary versus HR practitioners are proactive. It's all about being proactive and seeing the foreseeability of a lawsuit, right, before an issue happens. That's what we're trying to prevent. We're trying to prevent from having to call the attorney to get us out of the situation. And by the way, attorneys don't get you out of the situation. Attorneys mitigate. They mitigate the liability. So you're still going to have to pay some money. You're going to owe something. There's no such thing as a zero sum judgment. You're always going to have to pay an attorney. You're always going to owe someone something. So that's what we want to do in HR. Or if you don't have an HR practitioner, and this is what scares me right now, and then I will digress. A lot of HR folks in these big hotels have been laid off. And I'm talking like big hotels of 300 room, 500 room properties that have labor unions, labor contracts.
Yes.
And they have no HR person working there right now. And they're open and there's employees there. And they're hoping that the general manager will figure it out. And I tell you this, you might be saving money now, folks, but I guarantee you one mistake, one labor law mistake, one wrong move can cost you a lot more than that HR director's salary for 1 year. It can cost you millions of dollars, and that's what's going to put them under.
Yes.
And so that's what we don't want. We don't want to be reactive. We need to be proactive.
Very good. I love that too. I love that too. Okay, so Long Beach State, we're wrapping up. We're at 1:53. So I ask one question here. Now this has to do with, and like I said, everything comes from my experiences working in 30 years of hotel crap. So, I mean, some crap. I mean, I've loved it. Don't get me wrong, but I've dealt with crap over the years. Right now, HR and a GM. Okay. There's a, how can I put this? And you may know where I'm going with this, but it's sometimes, and it could be just me, but in bigger hotels, larger hotels, the GM, okay, the GM could do anything and the HR person should be a neutral person. Am I right? And you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. Bring okay. It. Ask the question.
I don't even know how to form a question. If the GM's doing something that is wrong, he or she needs to be called on it by the HR person, because at the end of the day, it's the HR person that keeps the hotel out of trouble, or it keeps that person out of trouble. Can you jump in and you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, I love this question. Even though you didn't ask the question.
You have five minutes.
All right. I'll keep it under four so you can do a closeout. All right. So check it out. So there is, I don't know if this is true. I haven't validated this, but a rumor has it that HR practitioners suffer more stress-related health issues than firefighters. The stress inducement that an HR practitioner gets, just for example, and I could speak from my own experience right here. When I know that we have mass layoffs coming up, okay, and we're going to be laying off some folks, or we're going to terminate someone, I know that someone's going to get terminated 4 days from now, but yet I have to still see them within the next 4 days and act like as if everything is perfectly normal. And it's like kind of like being the CIA, FBI agent, like top secretness, right? It's like you have to hold this stuff in. So let me just start by saying that. It's a very stressful job in the sense of it is very, very confidential. Some of the things that you come into is in terms of information. So when you have a general manager who is perhaps unethical, or you work for a smaller restaurateur or hotel, where they're the owner and operator, and they are asking you to do something illegal. They're telling you to hire that person, even though they cannot supply documents to legally work in the United States. They know, but that owner forces you, the HR person, to still hire that person. That's where we run into this ethical dilemma, and it's up to the individual to decide what to do. I could blow the whistle. In California, we have the Whistleblower Act that would theoretically protect me. But let's be honest. If I blow the whistle and I call on the government regulators to come in and regulate, I'm not going to get a job anywhere and anywhere anytime soon in the near future with any employer, because they know I'm that guy, you see? So I think what happens is it's a relationship. And this is what I love about working at Kempton and one of my all-time favorite general managers, Albert Smith, who is now vice president of operations for Highgate Hotels out of New York. We still stay in touch to this day. But what I loved about him and our relationship is I can tell him straight up what was up, what he was doing, what he shouldn't be doing, and he respected it. He would come to my office and he would ask me, like any good leader should, do you have any feedback for me, Ryan? Do you have any suggestions on how I could have handled that situation better with that employee? Right? And so it's that partnership. And if you don't feel that you have that partnership as an HR person, get out. Go find a new property that aligns with your core values, that aligns with the company's core values. My core values were more aligned with Kempton at the time than it was with Marriott. You see, Marriott was very conservative back in the day. And they've come out of that a little bit. But Kempton was all about, yes, if you have tattoos going up your neck, we want you. If you have ear piercings, we want you. As long as it wasn't going to offend you or offend anyone, as long as it was in good taste, they wanted that person because they recognize everybody is unique. And so that's why I went to Kempton. I aligned myself with a company whose core values aligned with mine. And if you are an HR person, it is true. You are in the middle of the road all the time. You have a job. Balance ownership interests and balancing the operation, and you're caught in the middle. When that general manager does something unethical, you hopefully have a good mentor at the corporate office at a higher level than you in HR that you can bounce ideas off of. And then she or he, the vice president of HR or corporate, is going to help guide you through that situation to deal with that general manager. And should it get out of hand, the HR person's going to be protected. And the vice president of HR or the chief human resource officer at corporate is going to then come in and deal with that general manager directly. That's generally how, in my experience, again, mostly at Kempton, that's how that is handled.
Wow. That would, and you came right to the minute, right to the second. Wow, this is great. No, thank you so much for that. That was a great answer to that question. And I know it was difficult. I had to give you one difficult question, something, right?
It was a good question.
But I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on the show. We're almost out of time. I probably got about 30 seconds, but I want to thank you, Dr. Ryan Giffen, a professor at Long Beach State University, for your time. Thank you for linking in with me on LinkedIn and being open to networking and coming on. And you haven't seen the last of me, and we haven't seen the last of each other. We have a lot of things in common. We came through the same company, two companies we have in common. So this is great. So, but thank you so much. And then this will be on all platforms. Once this is done, I'll make sure I put it on LinkedIn. You'll see it, and you can copy the link and put it wherever you would like it, as well as on LA Talk Radio for the podcast. So hotels, we are out of time. Thank you again, Dr. Ryan Giffen, for being a guest here. You guys take care. We'll see you next week for show number 79. So take care. Have a great week. Bye.
Thank you for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. Please tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. as we talk to other hospitality professionals. Your feedback is important. Email Russell at russell@russellofhotels.com with any questions or suggestions. Until next time, try not to be a person of success, rather become a person of value.